Now back to Mad Dog Unleashed with Christopher Russo on SiriusXM's Mad Dog Sports Radio.
Sean McAdam, of course, columnist for Boston Sports Journal. He's one of the good guys up there in Boston. He always says hello. We got Farrell today. Let me give him a couple book thoughts first. Sean, welcome. How are you today, okay?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Jonathan Inge's new book in Ali. You're going to like that. I had him in studio.
I heard a little bit of him. I heard a little bit of him with you last week, Chris. I wish I had heard more, but I heard about the last half hour.
Very good. And I just picked it up last night. It comes in on. It's out on October 24th. It's the NBA, and here, get him in studio. Jack McCallum's got a new book out. It's essentially on Jerry West, but it's on the 71 Lakers and the 2017 Warriors. West was obviously part of both. It's called The Golden Years. Let me give you the right title. Hold on. Let me make sure I get it right. It's called, Golden Days, not Golden Years. The Golden Days by McCallum. And you know McCallum's a good NBA guy, so you got that too.
Absolutely. All those years at Sports Illustrated.
It does a good job. Okay, we got a lot to do. First off, I'm not that surprised because I know Dombrowski wanted his own guy in here. I don't think it's fair, but I'm not surprised. How about you on the firing of John Farrell today?
Not a huge surprise, Chris. I wrote a few weeks ago talking to people outside the organization mostly. The feeling was that Farrell would have to get to the ALCS to save his job. And when he didn't, and when they lost in pretty embarrassing fashion in the first two games, and give him credit, they came back and played hard at the two games at Fenway, 1-1, and were in it until the bottom of the ninth of game four. But that's two first-round exits in a row after winning 93 games both times. And you can be Billy Bean and talk about the randomness of postseason results, but when you have $190 million payroll and the expectations that are here, two first-round exits are not going to cut it. I think it goes deeper than that. But when they got knocked off in the division series for the second year in a row and are 1-6, in the postseason in those 2 years, you could sort of read the writing on the wall.
Now, Dombrowski said today that it didn't make any difference how far they went this year. He felt a new voice. Do you believe that or not believe that?
Well, I mean, that may well be. Dave did not say a whole lot today. He was rather circumspect when it came to explaining his reasoning and logic behind this move. There was a lot of, just felt we needed a change, time for a change, needed a new voice, avoided a lot of specifics, didn't cite anything that necessarily pushed him to make this decision. To me, if you get to the ALCS and you win a tough division, it's pretty hard to get rid of a guy. I mean, they did it with Grady Little in 2003, so it's not unprecedented. I don't want to say he's not telling the truth, but I think getting to another round would have been a lot harder to sell this, both internally to upper management and ownership. And I think you'd wonder about what the look is across the game if you just got rid of a guy who got you to within a game or two of the World Series.
I agree with that. Now, do you think Dombrowski made this call, or do you think he was pushed into it by the ownership group up there in Boston, which obviously, getting knocked out, as you said, second year in a row, Patriots there and everything else, big TV ratings and what have you, that is not going to be acceptable. They got high expectations. Did Dave make the call on his own, or did he run it by folks upstairs?
It's my understanding, Chris, that he made the recommendation. He went to both President and CEO and Sam Kennedy and principal owner John Henry and said, I think we need to make a change. And it's my understanding that both those gentlemen allowed him to make that call. Whether there was any pushback at all about the nature of it, I think the overriding factor became, look, if you're going to have a president of baseball operations, you have to empower him to have the people working for him that he chooses. Otherwise, why give him that title and that sort of power? So when Dombrowski made the recommendation, the way things work and the chain of command, it was as good as done.
All right. Now, I heard that maybe that whole thing with Machado earlier in the year in April, that he and Farrell had a huge shouting match, the way that was handled with Pedroia on the slide and Barnes and everything else, and maybe Dombrowski didn't like the way that was handled. Is that true or not true?
I have heard the same thing. That was before I was back to work and on the beat, Chris, but just talking to some people, that is my understanding as well, that it was quite loud, and it's not in front of players, then it was overheard by players, and that's never a good look for a manager when you have the GM, or in this case, president of baseball operations, berating the manager about how he's handling things. I don't think it was handled well, but I also think if you're Dombrowski, there are ways to do that so that it's not out in the open and players aren't privy to it.
And now Dombrowski makes every road trip. This is a very active GM who's got a pretty good feel, he thinks, of his team. Is that correct?
Well, he certainly does make every road trip. I think that, you know, there are some things you can learn by being with the team. As you probably know, Chris, that's virtually unprecedented in 2017. It was more popular 20, 30 years ago that a general manager traveled with the team a lot. You almost never see it anymore. In that regard, Dombrowski's something of a throwback. He likes to take the temperature, I think, of a team. He likes to see how the day is handled. And I think it's fair to assume that if you're the manager working under him, that can be a little uncomfortable, where you feel like you're being judged and watched 24/7. Whether that played into, you know, whether things Dombrowski observed on a daily basis and being around more than most general managers or president of baseball ops are. He didn't get into that too much today, but it probably was part of his fact-gathering mechanism and program.
Well, let's look at this from a postseason standpoint. You can't blame Farrell for the last 2 years. I mean, he has not got a well-pitched game. I mean, think about it. I mean, Price, Porcello, and Buchholz last year, the one win he had this year, Fister got four outs. I mean, you can't scream about Sale in there for a long time the other day. It's not like Kimbrough went in there, lights out. He gave up a run, too, and a big hit. So, I mean, you want to argue about his X's and O's, which I know in Boston they love to do and pick on him, and you want to make a change, all right. But, I mean, how in the world is it his fault with what's happened to the Red Sox in the last two postseasons? What's your take on that?
I agree, Chris. You know, if you are getting a combined, I underscore that word, combined 11 and a third innings from your starters in four postseason games, you're going to have the 27 Yankees lineup and the Nasty Boys from Cincinnati lined up in your bullpen and whoever else you can throw out there, and you're not going to win anything when your starters are giving you an average of less than three innings per start. The two best pitching performances they got all postseason were David Price in Game 3, the game they won, and the first four innings of Chris Sale in relief. They did not have, and, you know, this should sort of go without saying when you talk about starters not even giving them 12 innings over a four-game series, they did not have a single three-up, three-down inning or a 1-2-3 inning from their starter in these four games.
Wow.
So you're falling behind. They had the opposition, the Astros in this case, scored multiple runs. They scored in every first inning that they of the four games. And they had multiple runs in the first three before being limited to one in Game 4. So every game, the Red Sox either came up in the top of the second on the road trailing by multiple runs, or before they came up at home were already trailing one time by multiple runs.
Yeah, very difficult to win that way. Now, why are the fan base in Boston? I know they like to pick on managers. And even Francona probably got pounded on a day-in, day-out basis. But, why such a disconnect with Farrell? Is he not good with the media? Is he boring? Why do the Red Sox fan base, which is a little, you know, like all fan bases can get off the deep end, why are they so down on Farrell? Why have they been over the last, say, year, year and a half? What can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I think some of it is, you know, as you know, Chris, there are two pretty powerhouse all-sports radio stations in the market. I think a couple shows and people in particular were pretty tough on Farrell. No matter what he did, if one of the things they did this year that was certainly ripe for second guessing is they were a really aggressive, some would say too aggressive, base running team, and it ended up that they had 30 runners thrown out at the plate over the course of the season, and they also led the league in unforced. You know, obviously, if you if there's two outs and you got a guy on first, and there's a ground ball to short, and there's a forced play at second, that doesn't count. But when you are totaling the bases and extra bases taken and outs made on the bases because of aggressive play, they led the league in being thrown out on the bases. Now, what that doesn't tell you is that they also were in the top three in extra bases taken. And this was not a great offensive team. They made the mistake of never replacing the power that they lost with the retirement of David Ortiz, a guy who hit 37 homers and knocked in 115 runs. And they somehow thought, well, we'll make that up somewhere else. Well, they didn't. And I think to make up for that, Farrell had the team thinking very aggressively on the bases, trying to go first to third, trying to score from first on a double, trying to force the issue because they couldn't wait around for the three-run homer in the beginning. And in this era, Chris, as you know, with the three true outcomes and so many walks and so many strikeouts and so many homers, it becomes harder and harder to put together one of those, you know, three or four hits in a row for a big inning. So to make up for that, he had them running, and sometimes they were a little reckless. But you always heard the second guessing about being cut down at the plate or being thrown out first to third, but you didn't hear about it when it resulted in a run scored or putting pressure in a good way on the defense. That was one of the issues I think a lot of fans had with him. And look, I don't think Farrell is a great tactical manager. I don't think he's horrible, but it's not his strength. I think he didn't get enough credit for how well he handled the bullpen, which ended up ranking second in the American League this year. And to me, that's one of the primary moves that a manager has to make. You know, when do you take the starter out? When do you get a guy up? When do you match up with a lefty? All those things. I thought he did that very well. Maybe that comes from the pitching background. Some of the other stuff probably left something to be desired, and people jumped on that.
All right, now, last time they tried this, they got rid of Francona. He won three championships, going to the Hall of Fame, and they won two championships, going to the Hall of Fame, and they brought in Bobby Valentine, which is a complete disaster. They're going to let Dombrowski bring the guy in he wants to bring in, or is somebody upstairs going to make the call for him? How's it going to work?
No, I think he has more autonomy at this point. Remember, I think one of the reasons that Bobby V was brought in was because they had at the time a young and fairly inexperienced GM in Ben Cherington, and I don't think they had the confidence in his decision-making ability the way they do with Dombrowski. Dombrowski's been doing this for better than 30 years. They gave him complete control. They gave him the title of director, you know, president of baseball operations. So it stands to reason if he went to them and said, I think we need to make a change, and they thought it was imperative to empower him and allow him to call the shots on dismissing one guy, then it follows that you're going to trust him to make the call on the replacement. That doesn't mean that there aren't other voices in the room and there isn't some input, but I don't think he's going to have done to him what Cherington had done to him by Lucchino in particular on the Valentine hiring.
Is this a good move, yes or no?
I think it was probably time. I think shelf life is short in a market like Boston. We're seeing that maybe it may be time for Girardi to move on in New York when all of this is over, regardless of what happens tonight. I think there were some issues in terms of the players' response to him. Some of the Eckersley and David Price stuff did not reflect well. It seemed like there were things going on in the clubhouse that that from the outside looked like they could have been handled better. On one hand, the guy's coming off two straight division titles, two 93 win seasons. How bad could he be? And the answer is he wasn't bad, but I think there that there comes a time when it is time to make a change, and so I'm not terribly surprised.
Good job, Sean. We talk soon. Thanks very much, pal. Appreciate it today.
All right, Chris. Always good being on with you.
Always love you. Good to have you aboard. Sean McAdam, we continue.